How many of you have noticed that certain words in your lifetime have changed meanings? I find this especially true when I try to communicate with my children. My parents told me that they found that true when they tried to communicate with me. I remember when bad meant bad. And something being bad wasn't good. There are, and by the way, we could do this for an hour and 15 minutes, and I'm not going to. But, I mean, you guys get the idea that over time, language changes, meanings change as words are overused or underused, and the meaning can change with context and vernacular, and so you guys all understand that. So think about the word love. Love may be one of the most overused words in the English language. Would you agree that is probably true? People love things that they actually don't love. They just like, because it's not cool to just like something. You have to love something to show how serious you are about it. So you can't just like stuff anymore. So people love everything. This will make me sound like a guy who just turned 55. We've turned love into an emoji. It's just an emoji now. My daughter will now send me messages in emoji. Not so that I understand what she's saying, but I think specifically for the purpose of me not understanding what she's saying. This is one of them that someone will text you 100. I don't even know what that means. What does that mean? That's 100%. So if you get that, but you haven't said anything to them, what does that mean? How can you agree with something that nobody said? I don't even know what. And this is the dilemma of old people everywhere. Some of you are going, Stuart, I'm older than you, and I know what the 100 means. You probably have grandkids then. That's probably why you understand. Thank goodness I don't have any of those yet. Last week, we looked at a text from 1 John 3 where John was stating the significance of loving people within the body, loving the brethren, loving each other, and he went into great detail about how significant that is. This morning, we're going to look at the second half of that passage, which is 1 John chapter 3, verses 16 through 18. And this is where John goes into detail in explaining what love means. Now, you would probably question, well, why would John have to tell people what love means? And I think one of the things that's universally true is that you can intellectually understand a command and still not understand what the application is. And so last week when we were talking about love, probably a lot of you, when you were looking around the room, and I was telling you, look around the room and see, you know, do you love these people? What probably was happening is a lot of you were looking around the room going, okay, well, I like that person, and I like that person, and I like that person. And we should pay careful note that John doesn't say that we are to like each other. He says we are to love each other. And everybody in this room intellectually understands the difference in liking something and loving something, right? Okay? So after John gives that command in 1 John chapter 3, in verses 14 and 15, then in verse 16, he follows that command up with this statement. He says, we know love by this. So he says, what I'm going to do is I'm going to identify, when I say you guys have to love each other, I'm going to identify what that means. Okay? I'm going to give you a clear definition of what I mean when it says to love somebody. We know love by this, that he laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for the brethren. Now, if you looked around the room last week and you were identifying all the people in the room that you love, do that again this morning and go, how many of these people would I die for? And I'll bet for most of you, that number shrinks exponentially. that number probably shrinks exponentially. Some of you are going, okay. I see where you're going. I like a lot of these people, but there ain't many people in this room I'm dying for. Okay. So let me ask you a question. Why do you think John says this? Anybody want to take a shot at why John would tell the church that he's writing to that this is how I define love? Now, I'm going to give you I've given you a lot of statements in the previous sentences I've written about the importance of loving each other. And so now what I want to do is I want to clarify exactly what I mean by love. And here's how I'm going to define it. We know love by this. Jesus laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for our brothers. Because of the persecution of the day, maybe that's why. Hey, don't be a snitch. Don't give up your friends if you get caught and they're going to kill you if you don't give up names. Say goodbye.
The power of the word.
I mean, you guys get this, right? We can kind of get a concept of this. Now, let me ask you a question. What would it be like to be a part of a church that loved like that? Can you imagine what it would be like to walk into a building and sit down to fellowship and worship with people that you knew that they loved you enough that they would die for you? Now, is that what the modern church looks like? We have created a church in the modern world where people will fist fight over carpet color and song choices and the thermostat. It's cold in here. It's hot in here. It's never just right. I don't like this. I don't like that. I don't like what you said. You're in my seat. Blah, blah, blah. Does that sound like a church where people are willing to die for each other? It sounds more like a church where people want to kill each other. Would you ever have a church split in a church where people were willing to die for each other? No. Would you ever have a circumstance where people wouldn't sit on the same side of the church as somebody else because they're so mad at them in a church where everybody was willing to die for each other? Of course not. Now, I know what some of you are thinking. Stuart, that is an unreasonable thing that John has laid out there. And so what I would do this morning is I would suggest that while that may seem true, it's probably not, but it's certainly what it is a goal for us to aspire to, that we should be able in our lifetime to learn to love like that. Does that kind of love come natural to us? No. So it is something to aspire to, right? Because one of the concepts of Christianity is that we aspire to be Christ-like. That is what we are shooting for, to grow into a relationship where we are more Christ-like. Now, let me ask you a question. It's real simple. Is there anybody in this room Jesus Christ wouldn't die for? And you know how we know the answer to that? Because he already has. So it's not even a hard question. We already know the answer because he's already done it. And so John here is laying out this principle, this thing that we should aspire to when we wear his name, that we should be willing to lay down our lives for each other. And I fully get it. This is something that we have to grow into, something we should aspire to. But here's the real question. If you're not there yet, and I would guess probably a lot of us aren't. Some of you may be, and if you are, good for you. But if you're not there yet, just this real simple question. Do you even want to get there? Do you really want to get there? Because the truth is, if you look at the behavior of most churches, what you see is people who have no desire to get to that point. I don't want to love anybody that much. The only person I love that much is me. What was it? Terrell Owens, who is a wide receiver, used to play football. I didn't love that guy, but one thing I really liked about him, he was probably the most honest person who ever lived, because he famously got up and once in an interview and said, "I love me some me." And I was like, that's the most honest thing anyone's ever said in a professional sports interview. He was perfectly comfortable telling the world, the person I love most in the world is me. That's an unfortunate truth, but it was real, and he was willing to admit it. And so we start asking ourselves these questions. What would a church look like? What would I look like as a person if that was my attitude towards everyone in the church, that I would lay my life down for them? Well, if I'm willing to die for you, I'm probably not as willing to fight with you about stupid stuff, right? And so we wouldn't be so easily fragmented as a church, and we wouldn't be so easily separated as a church. And one of the trends that's happening in the church right now is the migratory Christian, where I go to a church and I'm there for a little while, and then somebody makes me mad or I don't like something, so I go somewhere else, and I stay there for a while and I get mad and I go somewhere else. Can you imagine? That would probably happen a lot less if we cared that much about each other. Because if you were in a room full of people that you were willing to die for, what would it take to make you leave them? Probably not much. Probably a lot. I mean, you would think, right? If you loved everybody in that room enough to die for them, it'd probably take a lot to get you to leave them. Now, for those of you who are like, I used to go somewhere else, what are you saying about me? I'm not saying nothing about you. I'm not saying anything about you. But that is the nature, that's the disconnected nature of our world now. That when things are not going well, what do? We move on. We move on. By the way, do you think there's a connection to why the divorce rate's so high in this country? We have created a world of disposable relationships. That's the world we've created. Disposable relationships. If it doesn't work, throw it away and go get a new one, right? That's the kind of world we live in. And so what John is doing here, he's saying that there is supposed to be a different level of connection in the church that separates us from all other entities. In a community, a church shouldn't look like just another civic organization like the Ruitans or the Shriners or whatever other groups are out there. The PTA. The church is supposed to be different. What's supposed to set it apart? That all the people in the church are perfect? No. What sets the church apart is the love that we have for each other that does not necessarily exist in these other communities. Unfortunately, we've kind of gotten away from that. And so we set this as our goal. If I can walk into church Sunday and tolerate most of the people in the room, I've had a good day. Now, some of you are laughing, but that's probably exactly the attitude some of you walked in here with today. If I can just tolerate the people in the room today, it's going to be a good day. If I can somehow get out of this building without being mad at anybody, if I can get out of here without being offended today, it's been a good day. Do we really think that was the condition that Jesus Christ died for? So that we could exist in fellowship like that? Is that really what we think he was shooting for? So John says, we know love by this, that he laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for the brethren. Then in verse 17, now it's going to get really personal, because now he's going to get in your pocket. Verse 17, but whoever has the world's goods and sees his brother in need and closes his heart against him, how does the love of God abide in him? Oh, man. Now, why would John say this? Well, let's be honest. How often do you have the chance to die for a brother or sister in Christ? I mean, it's really not that often, right? I mean, let's be honest. Not that frequent that we get to do that. Some of you are going, well, once. That would probably be it, right? Because you can only lay down your life for somebody one time. So probably doesn't happen that often. So what's the application, John? How do people know we're willing to die for them? If we don't ever get the opportunity to die for them, how do people know? Well, John puts it in a more practical, everyday application. He says, whoever has the world's goods and sees his brother in need and closes his heart against him, how does the love of God abide in him? Now, when my kids went off to college, this changes every so many years. They'll have different colleges. The Bible colleges will have different phrases or catchphrases for their particular campus. When at Johnson, the current one right now is called Uncommon Community. That's one of the things they teach there, that when you're in school there, it's a different kind of community. It's not like most campuses. There's an uncommon community because of the love of Christ. Now, is that really at play in the dorm? You'd have to ask my kids. I don't know. It's something to shoot for, I guess. But that's what John is talking about here, setting up this uncommon community in the church. Now, think about the application here. Need, notice he doesn't say want, he says need. Whoever has the world's goods and sees his brother in need and closes his heart against him, how does the love of God abide in him? Now, what do you think John is shooting at here? Is he talking about tithing? Is that what he's talking about? I don't think he's talking about tithing here. He's not talking about giving to the church. What is he really talking about here? You take care of each other. You take care of each other. If somebody in here had a legitimate need, a real need, they should not have to come to the church leadership and beg for help, right? They shouldn't have to do that. The members of the body, if they are aware of that need, what should they do? Should take care of it. It's pretty simple. We have become so bureaucracy driven in the church sometimes. It's infuriating that we'll see a need and we go, well, the church leadership should take care of that. That's why I give to the church. And so I'm going to let the bureaucracy run its course here. That's not what John is talking about here. He says, if you see a brother in need, you let him, you should address it. You should deal with it, especially if you have the things, if you have the world's goods, if you have the wherewithal to address that need, you should address it. When I was at Hunter's Bridge, when I was a youth minister at Hunter's Bridge, and I've shared this with some of you before, but there was a lady that used to, when the offering plate would go by, she would take money out. And I remember the first time I saw that, she just pulled like 40 bucks out. So after church, I went up to one of the elders and I said, look, I ain't like the plate police or nothing. I said, but do you know that there's somebody who's like taking money out of the plate? He goes, oh, yeah, Miss So-and-so. She does that all the time. And I said, you know about this? He said, we told her years ago. Anytime you need something, you just take it. Now, take a minute to absorb that. This is a lady. She was a widow. She lived by herself. Her kids had all moved off. I'd never met her kids, but I knew her. Sweetest lady, just the nicest lady. But this was the policy of the church. If you have a month where you're running a little short on money for your electric bill or your groceries, you don't have to come ask us. You just take what you need out of the plate. What a novel idea. Now, I know what some of you are thinking. Stuart, you can't turn people loose to do stuff like that. What if they're dishonest? If the scripture teaches us one thing about people who steal from God, what does it teach us? He knows how to handle that. I think in some cases with great flourish, he handles that kind of stuff. But this was the coolest thing, because she had apparently at some point in the past, she had come to the church and said, "Hey, can I get some help?" And they were like, "Look, you don't have to ask us every time. You're a good Christian woman. You've been a part of this church forever." And so of course, because I was trained as a preacher's kid, I started watching her. I was fascinated by this. I mean, I was just completely fascinated by this, that this was allowed to go on and that they knew about it. I'd never heard anything like this in my life. So I started watching her. You know what I noticed? Over the next several weeks, she would put money in when she had it. She'd put a 20 in, put some cash in. She'd put money in. And then one week, she might take some out. And then the next week, she'd put some in, and then maybe 2 weeks in a row, she might have to pull some. So what did she do? She gave when she had money to give, and when she was short, she got it back. Now, in my conversation, now keep in mind, I'm 24, so I'm at that age where I'm pretty sure I know everything, but everybody else is pretty certain I don't. Okay? So I'm talking to this elder, and I said, I don't know how I feel about this. He said, "It doesn't matter how you feel about it. You're not in charge." That's a fair point. And I said, "Well, yeah, but," he said, "Look, why do we take up offerings? I said, "Well, why do you?" He said, "So the church has the money to do the things the church needs to do. What's more important for the church than to take care of its own people?" Amen. I said, "Well, that's a good point." He goes, "And why should we come make her ask every time and try to humiliate her if she knows what she needs when she does?" So now some of you are sitting here going, "So does this mean I can pull money out of the plate next week?" I ain't giving nobody permission to do nothing, because I don't want Ward coming after me and Kenny. I don't want them charging me afterwards and tying me down and smacking me around. But this is the principle of how the church is supposed to work. You know, at the very least, we should take care of our own. We should be ministering to our own people. And not just as an organization, but as individuals, right? As individuals, if we see a need, and this is how we've gotten wired now, it's like we see a need and we feel like we got to go report it to the church so the church can take care of it. Well, what is, again, that bureaucracy mindset, what does John say? Look, if you see something, if you see a brother in need, and you close your heart against him, how does God's love abide in you? How does that even work? If you're willing to lay down your life for somebody, doesn't that mean by definition you're probably willing to help them out financially? I mean, who in the world is going to be willing to die for somebody before they're willing to write them a check? Then John says this in verse 18. He says, "Little children," I love the way he starts that verse. It seems awful condescending, doesn't it? "Little children." Now, I'm going to break this verse up into two parts. The first thing he says, "Little children, let us not love with word or with tongue." How many of you have ever heard people say that they loved you and you didn't believe them. Any of you ever had that happen? Somebody said they loved you and you were like, I don't think so. And if somebody tells you they love you and you don't believe them, what is normally the reason you don't believe what they said? Because their actions do not match what they're saying. Their actions don't match what they're saying. And going back to how we started this morning, we live in a world now where we throw the word love around just everywhere. We love this and we love that. Now Bob Campbell loves golf. He does love. I didn't say he loves golf more than you. I just said he loves golf. Susan's number one, golf. Number two, Rob, maybe three. I don't know where that fits. Bob loves to play golf. How do I know Bob loves to play golf? Because Bob will come in after day when it was 36 degrees and go, I went golfing yesterday. Now, I don't love golf. I like golf. You know what the difference is? I have a window. 50 to 75 degrees is my golf window. If it's hotter, if it's like 80 degrees, it's too hot for me to play golf. It's just hot. I don't love it that much. If it's 35 to 40 degrees, probably too cold for me to play golf. I don't love it that much. I like it. I don't love it. Bob will play in the snow. Bob will get a colored golf ball so he can find it in the white snow, and he'll go out and play golf. I don't love it that much. I remember going golfing with Joey one time. It was raining. You remember that, Joey? It was raining, like that Caddyshack rainstorm kind of. I mean, it was pouring. And I remember looking at Joey and I said, why are we out here? And he goes, I don't know. I don't love it this much. We had a good time. I don't even remember what we shot, but it was one of those days when you couldn't, you'd hit the ball in the woods because, well, the wind was blowing that way. That's just kind of what happened. And I realized that day, I don't love it that much. Now, there are things I love in this world. There's some things I like. There's some things I don't like. But we'll look at things and we'll say, well, I love this and I love you and I love that person. And you'll hear this. People say, I love my church. You hear people say that all the time. What does that mean? By the way, I don't want you to raise your hand because that would be, it'd be kind of snotty, to be honest. So don't raise your hand. But I just want you to ask yourself a question. Do you love your church? And I don't mean the congregation. I don't mean university church. I mean the church. Do you love the church? Do you love God's church? Now, as you're sitting there answering that question, and you go, yeah, then ask yourself a question. How many things get between you and the church? How easy an excuse do you have to not go to church or not fellowship with the church or not participate in church or not serve the church? Think about this. You know how many weeks in a row Jamie Fulford has been up here begging people to work in the nursery? That should have been taken care of in 1 week. 1 week. He should have got up here one time and said, hey, we need some help in the nursery. If you could sign up, that'd be awesome. And unless you just are physically unable, if you love the church, you're like, you know what? I can serve there. I can sit in a room and watch a baby. I can hold a baby while it cries. You know how I know? I've done it before. They're loud, but I got earplugs. It's okay. I can do it. I can do that. Hey, you know what? We need greeters. I can do that. I can stand at the door. I can stand at the door and fake a smile with the best of them. I can even look at people I'm not happy to see and say, "So happy to see you today. I'm still working on loving you." I love the church. I'll say it. I'll scream it. But do I mean it? Do I love it with my word? Or do I love it in what I do? Second half of that verse, John says, let us not love with word or tongue, but in deed and truth. And so John is laying out this thing. He says, look, for you to say that you love God, you love the brotherhood, you love God's family, you love everything about salvation, you love all these things. But here's the question. At the end of the day, does what you do communicate that love? How many of you have ever heard someone gossip and start like this? You know, I love so-and-so, but now I'm going to tell you some dirt about him. Have you ever heard anybody start that way? The southern way to do that is bless their heart. Bless their heart. I love Amber Davis. Bless her heart. And that usually means something's coming, right, Amber? I'm getting ready to talk some junk about her, but it's important that you know before I do that, that I love her. Okay. If I loved her, what would I probably not do? Talk junk about her, right? If I loved her, I probably wouldn't do that. And some of you are going, has he heard me do that? Yes. Yes, I probably have. You know, and you know what? I've done it. I'm not going to stand up here and lie. I've done it. I've talked about people said, I love so-and-so, but bless their heart. I've done it. We've all done it. There's probably not a person in this room that hasn't done it. John says, it doesn't matter what you say. That doesn't matter. You guys remember a passage in the scripture that says, not everyone who says, Lord, Lord, will be saved. You guys remember that verse? You know why that verse is there? Because of what John's talking about here. What you say, I never miss a chance to quote Ric Flair in church. Don't talk the talk if you can't walk the walk, baby. Woo! It worked so much better when I had long hair. And I used to have Ric Flair hair, but I did that in church once and it all went away. But that's what John's saying. He goes, it's easy to get up and talk about how much you love God and how much you love the church and how much you love his people. But the real proof is not in what you say, but in what you do. It's what you do. And so here's the question this morning that I would pose to you as the praise team comes to prepare to lead us in our time of communion. I would pose a very simple question to you this morning. Does God know how much you love him and how much you love his people, not based on the things you say or the fact that you've got a little cross on this morning, you got a little necklace with a cross on it, and so you're advertising, or you got a little Jesus fish on the back of your car? Does he know that you love him based on what you do? Based on how you treat his gathering, based on how you treat his people, based on how you minister to them and their need, based on how you behave. If everything you said in your life went away and you were solely judged on what you do, what would your standing be with God today? Now, that's an important question. Because you know what? That's how it's going to work. There are going to be a lot of people who are going to stand up one day and go, hey, I said this, and I used to testify, and I got up and sang in church, and I used to do this, and I said this, and I would talk to people. And he's going to say, yeah, but when push came to shove, you didn't love people, you didn't love me, you didn't love the church. You said you did, but the things you did didn't communicate that. So that's the question this morning. If you're judged solely on the character and the actions of your life, does God think you love him? And does God think that you love his church?